In the beginning, there was a creation of a small plastic case. In this case, there was an item called a DVD. When the DVD was placed inside the machine, the first movie was being watched. This allowed the Extra Features podcast to begin.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 217, and I am Kevin.
I'm Simon, looking for the intern.
I'm Daniel.
Anybody know what the intern might be doing? Because I can't seem to find him anywhere.
I think he's probably looking for autographs somewhere.
Oh, I thought he was got a new job picking up dog crap on the walkway near my house.
Well, he probably wouldn't have much to go with it today with the snowstorms.
Oh, maybe. But the intern, he walks slow, so it would take him a while to figure that out.
I don't think he could bend down to pick up the dog crap.
Well, maybe not. But it's a good exercise for him. He got to start somewhere.
You need one of the special broom scooper things?
I can get him one.
Maybe he's asking the dogs for autographs?
Maybe. You know, I don't know. One of those dogs could have been, like, in a movie or something.
You shouldn't say that about some of the actresses.
I didn't say that about actresses. I said about dogs.
Oh, yeah, okay. It could be from a dog's purpose, right?
Yeah, a dog's purpose, a dog's journey, I think home or something. I haven't seen it yet.
Dog's Way Home. Yuck.
So,
I thought you'd watch it. Okay.
So what have you been up to, Daniel?
Nothing, man. Watching movies?
No, you're not.
What do you mean? Yeah, I'm watching. Well, okay. Oh, yeah, I haven't been watching movies, dude.
Would you like to? Okay, fine. Kevin, up to anything?
We have the Toronto Comic Con. I don't know if we've recorded since that happened.
Nope.
That one. And then I've been working on other shows, Calgary, Dallas, Orlando. All these other cons that I work on, and so I've been sort of trying to catch up on some of the movies as I work. But I have to admit, I haven't been able to go to the theater for much, so it's mostly been home video stuff and Netflix.
All good, man. So you guys want to start then?
All right. What's the first film on our list?
How to Train Your Dragon: The Hidden World, starring Jay Baruchel, America Ferrera, F. Mary Abraham, Kate Blanchett, Gerard Butler, Craig Ferguson, Jonah Hill, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, and Kristen Wiig.
Well, Dan, since this is your childhood, why don't you start?
Well, actually, this is it's not really my childhood because I didn't even see the first one in theaters. I watched it, like, before the second one came out. But, for people that have, like, it's your childhood. Like, people who've grown up with it, it's, like, a great end to it. For me, like, I'm not a huge fan of the first one, but I love the second one. And I really, really like this one, too. It works. And I think it works as, like, not as, like, the villain's not that great, but it's not really about him. It's about, like understanding that your big friendship grows apart, I guess, with Hiccup and Toothless. And the ending just... I was, like, crying through, like, the last 30 minutes, so... And I think, like, with an ending, I think that's, like, what it's supposed to do. So... Yeah, and it was funny. I didn't really like the side characters as much this time. Like, Jonah Hill was just kind of annoying. I mean, Mintz-Plasse was fine, but, like, and then... the T.J. Miller replacement trying to do his best T.J. Miller voice was kind of weird. Yeah. I don't know what you think, Simon.
Oh, I have to disagree on so many levels. I thought this film's storyline was dull. Like, it's just a repeat of storyline from 2.
Yeah.
Let's introduce another new dragon. Oh, okay. The villain was so boring. He doesn't do anything. It starts off really nicely, and then, oh, I'm going to catch this dragon, this and that. Introduces new dragons. Great, I'll accept that. Okay. Oh, no, we got to flee our home and get to the special dragon place. Well, we know that's going to happen, so we might as well forget that plot point, because that's a guaranteed ending. I thought the whole point with the woman in the cage and got the bad guy to find out where they were was terrible. Telegraphed a mile away.
Kids movie, and she's stupid, so.
But it was just telegraphed the whole film that way to me. that you knew that was coming. I do got to admit the animation was beautiful.
Yeah, it always is, yeah.
I do like that. I did thought it even got better when they got to the special place and the dragon started bonding telepathy and stuff.
Yeah, that was visually really cool. Yeah.
So now we have like a slave master kind of thing with the dragon, so there's nothing the bad guy could have done against them because he would have just taken over their dragons too.
Okay, yeah.
Right, Hiccup would have just killed everybody. He would have won.
He's the alpha. And I thought it was really cool, like him finding the Light Fury. I thought that was a cool aspect. Because I just think it's more about Hiccup.
Yeah, I just...
More about Toothless, sorry.
What am I calling him? You want to call him Hiccup? I got the wrong guy?
Wait, which one? No, is Hiccup's Jay Baruchel?
Yeah, oh, sorry. Dragon. You know what I meant. What I'm just saying with this film is I found it lacked depth. It really lacked depth to me. I mean, everything, the voice casting was fine, the T.J. Miller. I just thought Sterling was terrible. His mom had, like, nothing to do. His future wife had nothing to do. It was basically, listen to Hiccup yak for an hour, Jay Baruchel.
But then Astrid had, like, stuff to do. Trying to get him back in line and everything.
Yeah, kind of like...
Well, I guess that's about it. But, I mean, she did well in the action scenes.
I guess so, but I was bored by the time we got to the end of this film. I just wanted it to be done.
No, I agree with the mom, though. All she had to do was, like, just stave off Jonah Hill's advances.
Yes, that was it. Big bad Jonah Hill.
I forgot how annoying his character was.
What? You forgot how annoying Jonah Hill was?
No, I love Jonah Hill. But, I mean, I haven't seen the second one in 5 years, so.
I agree. I just think it's done. I don't think.
Yeah, no. Like, yeah, the trilogy said.
Did it need a third film? I'd argue no. I didn't feel it added anything. Maybe a new dragon so they can sell some toys. If there are toys for this, I have no idea. I mean, it'll look nice on a box shelf so kids can pick it up and buy them all. You know? I mean, I really think they made a third one just because they can sell more DVDs than the first two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely brought in the Light Fury for toys and just marketing. And just, oh, look, it's Toothless, but white.
Yes.
I can't see a lot of toys, but I've seen a re-release push for the movies on buying them on DVD and Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
They did a big promotion.
See?
When they did them cheap.
I thought it was a good film. I liked it more than Lego Movie 2.
Lots of films are better than Lego Movie 2. Who is running stuff in the background? Okay, moving along to our Netflix movie, I guess.
Yeah. I can't answer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Triple Frontier?
Triple Frontier, starring Oscar Isaac, Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, Garrett Hedlund, and Pedro Pascal. I don't know if you guys recognize any of the supporting... other than Core 5, but I didn't really.
Kevin, do you want to start?
It's a hell of a cast for a Netflix movie.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So basically, Oscar Isaac is working down in South America, and he has a tip on a drug dealer that's hoarding money in his house. And so he comes back to the States, and he calls up a bunch of his... former unit buddies who I guess they went to Iraq together or Afghanistan or something. And they're all, basically they've done some mercenary work in the past, but Ben Affleck is having issues. He's not making money. He's not able to sell houses and condos and stuff. And so he gets talked into going down there with these other guys. And, they pull off this mission, but it doesn't go as planned. And in the end, I don't know. Overall, I mean, the acting is solid. It's they're all doing exactly what they do in every other movie they do. It's just that I found it very derivative, and it had some things about it reminded me of Three Kings, with the military guys doing a heist. The House Full of Money was kind of interesting, where the drug dealer basically put bundles of money in the walls and then plastered over them. So they just start ripping the walls apart in the house while he's away. I thought it was okay. I thought the locations were interesting. I thought the fact that the helicopter couldn't carry the money, the bags of money, and couldn't get them over the mountains to get to the ocean. So then they had to carry it over on mules and then on their backs and everything. As they went along, they just kept losing. Like they would have had, what, like $200 million originally? And by the end of it's gradually whittling down to nothing. So I think they end up with about $5 million between all of them at the end of it. And then something happens to Affleck, and I don't want to spoil too much, but...
No.
I thought it was okay.
Sorry.
I wouldn't go to a theater to see this, which is probably why it was good that it went to Netflix initially. It would probably get more attention this way than it would be in a movie theater. That was the only thing I could think about it. Who's next?
Dan.
Okay. You know, Ben Affleck's characters are kind of boring. Would you, like, buy a condo from him? Like, I don't know. Like, that salesman thing that he was, like, showing someone through the condo, I wouldn't buy it. I love heist movies. So it was, like, interesting that it was, like, blending, I guess, kind of, if it was more like a cartel movie, but, like, blending the heist aspect is interesting. And then it just kind of turned into, like, First Blood trying to survive. Like, almost. And I'd like to add, it's like an escape through the jungle of, like, all right, so you're just, this is the getaway, but you can't just hide in an alley somewhere and wait for the cops to go by. Mm-hmm. You're in the middle of nowhere trying to log $250 million, like, of your own greed when the helicopter can only carry, like, 6,000 kilos and you're already, like, over the weight. And I thought that was cool, but, like, I don't know, just disappointing because it was boring at times, and even though, like, the settings and the action sequences were great, but, like, when it kind of died down, like, the character-wise, they're just, like, ex-military, and they're kind of to the point, and, I don't want to spoil it, but, like, the big emotional beat, I didn't really feel it. I was like, oh, okay. Like, the spoiler you were, like, talking about, you don't want to spoil it, but I was like, all right, like, I didn't really feel it, I guess. I like the brotherhood that they share, like, with, like, being military and everything. And, like, I like the action scenes, but it was a bit, like, disappointing because I thought, like, wow, they've been doing something really cool with heist movies and then with, like, out of the heist genre, and it's cool that it turned into, like, this jungle thriller, which, I mean, it was fine, but... Yeah, when it ended, I was like, eh. Yeah, that's just my thought. I don't know. I wanted to be like, yeah, but I was like, eh.
Yeah.
I'm surprised neither of you discussed it. I think we saw two different films. I think the first half an hour of this film where Oscar Isaac is chasing the woman through the village was phenomenal. I was really into the film for the first 20 minutes. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, forgot all about that.
I thought that was really good. And then he goes back. I'm like, okay, so they're gonna go in. We're gonna have a big gunfight or something, and then the cartel is gonna go after them or something. But no, I don't get that. I get a long out buddy drama heist movie that just goes on and on and. I'm like, I don't care anymore. They just talk and talk and talk. So I'm like, okay, I'll wait. When the drug deal goes down and they go to the guy's house to get the cash, something will happen. Nope. Nothing happens. Okay, they're going to get the helicopter. They can't take off. It's too heavy. I got it. Maybe they'll need some action then. Nope. We need a MacGuffin. Okay, they're going to drop the cash. They got to get it that way. Fine, I'll let it go. But I really felt nothing happened other than that first 20 minutes. I thought it was like two fully different films here we watched.
Well, the first one was like him being a contractor in South America, and then that was just 20 minutes, so that was just like the teaser of like how these how the character is, I guess, and then it's the heist. I feel like it stuff happened with the heist. Like, they stole the money, and then they got the helicopter crashed, and I mean, yeah, they're all talking and everything, and it's constantly. Like, oh, look, they're character building and not doing anything. They're sitting around a fire. Yeah. I don't know.
Don't care. Do something.
Yeah, like, can you just get home already?
Like, that was it. I'm like, I got some MacGuffin with the copter, because without that, we kind of don't have a film. Okay, we need some problem to happen for these guys. But then that spoiler you guys don't want me to talk about happens, and that's really it. I'm like, that's all that happened the second act of this? Nothing.
I thought it was weird that that guy was in the rocks firing on them in the first place. How would he know to be there to go after them?
Well, he tracked them.
Yeah, he was tracking them for like 2 days.
It said that.
Well, okay, I mean, should we just talk about it?
Go. It's up to you guys. Do what you want to do.
I mean,
it doesn't matter. The guy can be in the rocks. I get it.
Okay,
then
at
the end of the film, they kind of do what they do, and I'm like, really? That's what they're going to do? Just go, here you guys go. We're done.
Yeah, and walk off. Because he figured he was responsible, most responsible, I guess. Talk about the spoiler, but not to talk about the spoiler.
I just thought it was silly nonsense.
I didn't think it was silly, but they just got, like, I know, I agree. It's very uneventful at times.
And I guess I'm going to argue, is Charlie Hunnam ever going to get better, or he's just bleh all the time?
Charlie Hunnam is like Jason Momoa. He's like, he's just women-like.
That's it. He is boring as crap. And Oscar Isaac is joining that group for me. I've discovered Oscar Isaac cannot get better than his script. If he has a decent script, he's decent.
Right.
If he has a crappy script, he's crappy.
But he has a lot more charisma than Charlie Hunnam.
Charlie Hunnam is like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know what you're getting.
Oh, no. He doesn't even have jelly on him.
he's just one slice peanut butter.
Yeah. Like maybe one banana.
One banana, maybe.
Yeah, and then cut diagonally.
And, I mean, Ben Affleck usually bores the crap out of me, and again, he does in this film.
No, but his character is just kind of like, ooh, I need the money. Like, oh, I don't want to leave yet. Let's just get more money.
Well, look at me trying to sell this condo. Look how good I am at selling condo. I'm going to spend 10 minutes.
I need all this money because I can't sell condos.
I thought it was the perfect Ben Affleck role. He's a man that is overcome by his own problems. He can't get past his greed or his addictions or whatever the case is. In this case, I have lots of money and I can't turn it away. But I think that's an Affleck, like an actual Affleck personality trait, is that he goes too far every time, whether it's with alcohol or drugs or whatever the case is.
Or he's fat.
He's fat. Remember. But in this case, he goes too far. His greed kills him, basically, and puts the others at extreme jeopardy. You know, he pushes the limit every time. Anyway, I don't think it's that great of a film.
No, it's terrible.
No, I mean, it's a 6. Maybe.
4.
Like, on my scale, yeah, 6. Yeah, 7. That sounds about right. 4 for you.
It will be a 4 if I ever write about it.
All right, you guys want to open the vault?
Yeah, who's opening it? Where's that intern? Has he showed up yet from dog pooping services yet?
Like, I'm not an expert on opening the vault. I don't know the sound effect.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I'll do it. Where's Bob? I don't know. Okay.
Told you, he's pooper scoopering.
Bob's not in the vault. Okay, so that was awkward. Network. Starring Faye Dunaway, William Holden, Peter Finch, Robert Duvall, Wesley Addy, and Ned Beatty.
Before we even start the review, I just want to state we're watching this because it was my pick for winning the Oscar Duel.
Whoa, what happened?
I don't know what that is.
No. Let me try that again. It didn't work very well. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, All-Star Network. I don't know. I played that away. 100% was amazing in this film.
Yeah.
I thought Peter Finch was the weak link, and everybody else was truly also excellent.
Wait, was Peter Finch the guy they were exploding?
Yes.
Exploiting?
Yes.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
I thought he was good.
I thought he was good, like, but he wasn't amazing. I mean, Faye Dunaway blew me away with her acting in this film.
That iconic, like, I'm mad as hell, right?
I mean, I watched this film, and I mean, we're going to spoil this film because I really want to discuss the ending and the stuff. I thought Robert Duvall was great in it. Ned Beatty was good in it. I just thought it was a great group of actors. I really thought they created this world perfectly.
Yeah.
And I really believed in the world, and I thought the world existed.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought the storyline works, and the ending just blew me away. I love the ending.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, okay, this works. I think this film works on all levels. I think the storyline's great. I think it still holds up today.
Yeah, it's definitely a little slow for my taste, but like that kind of, I got chills during like the, like everyone shouting out their windows that they're not gonna take, they're mad as hell and they're not gonna take it anymore. That was awesome. And then like the Ned Beatty just, like that monologue with, that he was doing, like, you mess with the powers of nature. Like, that feels like out of a horror movie, like, what he was doing there. Like, the way that they set it up, that was just really cool. Like, that was a great drama.
I recently watched, for fun, The Fellowship of the Ring again.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I watched the extended edition. And I thought that movie moved a whole lot faster than Network.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's totally slow. That. Network is a very slow-moving film, yes.
I gotta say, for 2 hours, or under 2 hours, it felt like a four-hour epic.
Yes, it does.
And I kept thinking, too, it reminded me of Return of the King, and then I'm like, okay, now it's gonna end. No, we're gonna have a whole bunch of scenes. Okay, now it's gonna end. No, we have more scenes. The cynicism of it is incredible, and it does have some relevance to now, and I kept thinking, this is Fox News.
Yes.
This is basically the story of Fox News 40 years before it happened.
Correct.
Where a network basically shows biased news, and she creates this, I'm taking over the news division, she's from programming, and so she kicks William Holden out of his job. And you know, like she puts on psychics and like prognosticators and all sorts of weird stuff. And then this Beale guy who was going to kill himself because he was getting fired, and he becomes the voice of the generation by being crazy. He basically becomes who are those guys that are up Trump's ass that are on Fox News right now? Hannity.
I have no idea.
There's Sean Hannity is one of them, and then there's another guy, Tucker Carlson, and they're basically mouthpieces for the administration, but they say the stupidest, craziest things. So, like, to me, that's like the same thing. It's like, okay, let's hire these crazy opinionated guys to go online, but the problem with Beale in this film is that he's gone crazy, and he starts to see himself as a prophet of the generation, and he's going to tell people how it is, and he definitely crosses a line when he starts talking about management of the company that he works for, which I don't get for any particular reason. Why are they so fascinating to him that he would suddenly talk about it? Robert Duvall, I'm like, why is Robert Duvall in this movie? I mean, he's great. He's evil. And again, all the performances are great. There's just never any comeuppances for anybody except for Beale.
Correct.
Yeah.
And her whole idea of hiring liberation armies to do weekly television shows and all that stuff, that they would go to prison so quick.
I was thinking that.
Like, there's no way any government would allow that, even if they tried to put that on television. The fact that they were colluding with revolutionaries who were murdering people and encouraging them to do crimes is to me just insanity. And I think that's the point, is that in the hunt for ratings, you're willing to do whatever it takes. And yeah. They hire those two guys to murder Beale on the show. And the fact that it's completely, like, forgotten 5 minutes after it happens. It's a big deal. The news talks about it. And then we're back watching commercials about Mikey, and he likes it. And, you know, the $6 million man and whatever other shows was hot at the time. But, I mean, certainly this film garnered a lot of awards and nominations.
Yeah, I forgot about Bea just straight in the cast. She won for supporting actress.
She was
Holden's wife. Yeah. Or Schumacher's wife.
What was she from? I know her, that actress, but I can't picture what other films she's done.
One sec.
Let's go back to Never for Sale. I mean, I like
Poltergeist.
Oh, okay, you're right. She was the investigator.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think this film just works on levels because the world works. We allow it to happen. It explains everything to us, and people are following what Finch is saying. And is Finch really crazy, or he just doesn't give a crap anymore?
He's mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think he just doesn't care.
No, yeah.
He's like, I've done what I've wanted to do. That's it. I'm doing this, and that's it.
Oh, yeah, like, the way it portrays the media is definitely like, really interesting. And, like the, I think it's, like, media just doesn't get any comeuppance, I guess.
But yeah. Isn't that true of nowadays? Media really doesn't get, Fox News doesn't get comeuppance, CNN doesn't get comeuppance, they just keep rolling along.
Yeah.
I didn't like the way the movie opened with the voiceovers.
That was kind of strange.
The voiceovers took me out. But I don't know. Again, it's not a bad film, but
yeah, and like, I definitely, Kevin. It feels long. I found myself checking the time a lot because like, it's good for what it is, but it's like, okay, like it is a bit of a slog.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the Faye Dunaway scenes more than anything else. Like I've said, and I mean, I like the Peter Finch scenes, but I think 20 minutes could have been shaved off, and it would have been a perfect movie.
Okay.
I would say the whole side relationship with her sleeping with Holden was a completely irrelevant storyline.
Yeah, no need for it. It made no sense. I'm like, okay, Crosby, Street, and Oscar, that's all we would have done, but I could have lived without it too. But I still enjoyed the film.
I thought it was like, I thought like him talking about like, oh, like now I'm going to like, they're talking about it like a TV show. Like now I'm going to go back to my wife. Yeah, whatever he says, like, oh, abandons the hot one and tries to go back and beg back.
His speech to her was painful to sit there and listen to him. Like, he must completely revile her at that point. Like, because he launches into, like, a five-minute tirade, like, you're going to die alone and you suck. And, you know, like, I can't remember what he said, but it was literally painful to listen to it.
Yeah, like.
But I'm like, was this...
I'm your last connection to like anything emotional.
But was Holden wrong there? I don't think he was. I think that character is everything he said he was.
But 5 minutes before that, he was willing to keep the relationship going.
He knew it was impending doom, and he was accepting it and just keeping his mouth shut about it.
That's what he says. He says that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Holden is just trying to go, I don't really want to go back to my wife, but I guess she likes me better than you do. See you later.
Yeah. Like, dang, I guess I have to go back to the... And it was weird when they called the middle age, like, you're 58. Like, wait, what? How is that middle age?
But I think in the 70s that was old age.
No, the middle age.
Oh, like, middle age.
Like,
yeah.
Middle age was like 40, 45.
Well, I don't know. It's just, you're
almost 60. Wait, what?
I think it just depends on your world. If you accept the world building in this film and you accept the actors and actresses, actor story involved in the whole thing, do a great job.
Yeah, no, I just thought it was funny that he has gray hair and he's getting called middle-aged.
I was quite impressed when the Liberation Army came in and took the guy out, Peter Finch out, just drove him. Like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I was like, wow. It was a good ending for sure.
Okay. Are we moving along, Kevin?
All right, what's next on our list?
one, Phantom of the Paradise?
Correct.
Okay. Starring Paul Williams, Jessica Harper, Garrett Graham, and George Mamoli. Yeah.
So who's seen this?
I haven't.
Me
yeah,
new.
I haven't seen it.
Me and you.
You should see it at some point, Daniel. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I noticed it was by De Palma. I just didn't watch it.
I love this movie. To me, this is it's schlock for sure.
Okay, good. We're starting off the right foot. I'm good.
And it's the Phantom of the Opera story, but modern, like with rock music and essentially the Paradise is a rock club where, you know, the original Phantom of the Opera, it's an opera house. So it's about a guy who writes rock music that's taken by basically an evil producer / singer-songwriter played by Paul Williams named Swan. And Swan, it turns out, made a deal with the devil, so he's eternally young. It's kind of like a little bit of Dorian Gray story there. So Winslow Mortimer, the composer of the music, he ends up being scarred and left for dead, or Winslow Leach, I should say. So Winslow becomes the Phantom of the Paradise. He's the right voice has to sing his songs, and he'll kill anybody that sings the songs that he doesn't agree with. And one day they're auditioning, and so they set it up so that he's in the upper route, and so Swan is auditioning all these girls and different acts to sing the song. And so the first one they try to do is this kind of this Frankenstein guy, and then he gets murdered. And they also have the 50s doo-wop group, and they get murdered. And then this girl, played by, and I can't remember the actress's name. Let me just open a file here. Jessica Harper, who to me is just fascinating. I love Jessica Harper in this movie. When she comes out on stage and sings and does her dance, I mean, her dance puts Elaine Benning to shame. Or Elaine Bennis from Seinfeld to shame with her dancing, but anyway, it's a fun movie. I find it's kind of it's schlocky. It's kind of sci-fi. It's kind of horror. The music is great. I have the soundtrack on my phone all the time. The one Mephisto song is just fantastic. So I don't know. To me, it's a fun movie and highlight of the Guillermo del Toro tour that was all at the ROM last year was seeing the Phantom's mask was there. He had one of the Phantom masks there on display as an influence. And it's totally, you can see it in the work of del Toro. But De Palma is basically auteur filmmaking, so there's split screens and interesting camera angles, and he's having fun with making this film. And to me, that's the joy of filmmaking, this or creating something new, some art. And, you know, and no one's going to say it's the best film ever or it's deep on mm-hmm. any level, but it's a fun movie for me.
I have to agree with you. I found it slow here and there, not a lot slow, just here and there. I thought the acting was atrocious.
Really?
I liked the girl, same way you did. I thought Paul Williams was terrible. Not horrible in the sense.
Paul Williams.
He's just, I don't think this film is for me. I like the singing. I like the concept. I mean, the directing's beautiful. It's De Palma. I can't really knock it. I like parts of it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like 70% of the film and 30% I want kind of fixed. Does that make any sense? I just want a little bit more. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I didn't find it. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more storyline, but I don't think that this movie allows for that to happen.
No, I don't think there is much to work with there on the story other than it's a story about, it's basically the Phantom of the Opera story. It's,
no.
It's, he's in love with a singer, and everyone thinks he's dead, but he's not. But he has some control over the opera house. He has some influence over there. I thought it was a fascinating look. He's almost like a supervillain.
Yes. I wanted to be more of a supervillain, I guess.
And his voice box thing was really kind of cool.
Yes.
And the fact that he records all his music with that weird electronic voice.
Yes.
And then they can slow it down and change it and manipulate it a bit so they can understand him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like everything about this.
It's your kind of show.
The only thing I don't like Beef. I'm not a fan of Beef.
He doesn't really do much, Beef.
He comes out of a coffin at the airport and then he dies on screen.
Yeah, that's about it. He doesn't
I found that death very disturbing as a child when I was much younger and the movie was on television. But to me, this is a great... I mean, I have this on my... Like, I can watch this anytime on my phone.
Oh, I'm sure you could.
Mm-hmm.
I like the music a lot. I think the music did add a lot. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. The music is all written and mostly performed by Paul Williams.
Yes, the guy that wrote with Rainbow Connection, isn't that Paul Williams too?
Oh yeah, he wrote most of the Carpenters songs.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Paul Williams was a huge songwriting, and still is, big songwriting guy. And he had a very successful career as a sort of a country western, easy listening pop kind of guy. Still makes music now. He's still around.
Yeah, I met him at the TIFF a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got a question. Would this film be right for a remake?
It's so closely associated with De Palma that I think someone could remake it and do something with it, sure.
I think we could probably get some actual singers in there a little bit more, make it a little more poppy. I think that would happen.
Maybe. I did like the J.C. Fruits version of the song. And
yes, it wasn't bad.
And stuff, so. But the hell of it, that's a fun song.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here. I mean, obviously you love the film more than me. Do you think it lacked direction at times? It just sort of meandered at times? Like, it always was going forward.
No, I didn't think so. I think that maybe he goes a little bit too much into auteur area. With some of his stuff, some of his side shots, but you can tell this is pretty early in De Palma's career too. So there's some things that are kind of, you can tell he's imitating things he's seen.
Oh yeah.
Certainly he imitated Hitchcock for most of his career. But there's still not as much. There's not as much Hitchcock in this movie as there might be in others in his later films. Like to me, I think. My favorite film of his is, I like Blowout, or Blow Up, or whatever it is.
Blowout. I think. It's a good movie.
And I love Femme Fatale.
Oh, we know you do. We've done that one, too.
Yeah. Carrie's okay, and...
I love Carrie.
And stuff. But to me, this one, I always have a soft spot.
Fair enough.
And they say that they deliberately, while it's mostly Phantom of the Opera, they also work in Picture of Dorian Gray, as I mentioned with that, and The Faust Story. So where Swan signs away his soul to the devil.
He does.
So,
I don't think they gave him much choice, Faust, anything to do. Like, they kind of stuck. Kind of got railroaded.
And the film itself, when it was released, it was a huge box office failure. Yeah. A lot of negative reviews. But it's become a cult film.
Oh, absolutely, it's a cult film. You can see it.
If someone hasn't seen Rocky Horror Picture Show, is this a good movie to watch with training wheels for that?
I like this movie a lot more than Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay, because I just haven't seen either, so I was wondering.
It's a hard thing. I only like parts of... I think I like the songs more in Rocky than I do here.
Okay.
I would argue with Kevin, I like Rocky better. So,
I don't know. Something about Rocky Horror Picture Show, I've just never cared for it.
Acquired taste, I guess.
Yeah.
I think the acting's better in Rocky too, but Rocky is definitely a star-studded cast. They do set it up to be that.
I think the fact that Rocky is one thing and becomes something else at the end,
yes,
kind of for me. The fact it goes from being about kind of a haunted house, Frankenstein, that kind of stuff, to aliens, sure, from outer space, swimming in a pool and stuff like that. Just to me, that movie, it loses me.
I can see that.
Aliens.
Yes, he's ruined it for you, but yeah.
Yeah, I think Rocky Horror is more of an experience picture. I think if you went to the midnight releases and people dressed up for it and stuff like that, I think you'd probably like it more than...
I couldn't watch a movie like that for the first time. Everyone's so loud.
Meatloaf.
Anyway, okay. Moving along to The Wicker Man, starring Edward Woodard, Christopher Lee, Diane Silenso, Britt Eklund, Lindsay Kemp. That's kind of all who I recognize, or at least was listed.
Simon, you want
to
start on this
one? I'd love to start. I love this film. Thank you, Kevin. I've never seen it. Absolutely loved it.
Have you seen this movie?
The first time I've seen it, yes.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely loved it. I thought the pacing was slow, but it worked so perfectly for the plot.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what was going on. Not a clue. Mm-hmm. And mesmerized completely by Brooke Eklund, how hot she was.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
When she does her song,
yes,
in the... Yeah.
She's the one that smacked your ass around.
Yes. I love this film. I was enthralled. I liked the story. I liked the way it laid out. I loved the ending. It worked for me. Like, the whole time, I'm like, where is this going? What am I missing? I know there's a catch I'm missing, but I don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I mean, obviously, I started to get it nearer and nearer to the end. I started clicking in what was going on, but I really didn't until the very end, where they sort of spell it out for you in the last half an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this film. Daniel?
Well, I mean, I'll give a little synopsis. I mean, basically, Edward Woodard is a police constable who's lured to the Isle of Summerisle to find a missing girl. The island itself, the inhabitants there have basically abandoned Christianity, and they've gone back to paganism at the behest of the Lord of Summerisle, played by Christopher Lee. And so they're little things that they do that are not quite, that Christians would find quite off-putting, but there's some things, of course, that are traditions that Christianity adopted, so you can kind of see how Easter egg hunts and things like that are there's something going on. There's something odd that's going on with Sergeant Howie, and people deny that the girl even existed, and then other people are like, oh no, she's fine, and then but she's the MacGuffin. She's the thing that got him to the island, and we learned what's going on, and then there is definitely a huge twist at the end, and basically the hunter is the prey. Right. So have you seen this, Daniel, or no?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know how it ends.
Yeah, yeah.
So Cinefantastique has described this movie as the Citizen Kane of horror movies. And I don't disagree with them on that. I think it's probably one of the most interesting and disturbing horror movies. And it's not quite a horror movie.
I was about to say, there's nothing scary about this.
No, I think what's off-putting is the ending. The Wicker Man is this giant wooden man, and they lure Sergeant Howie because he's a virgin. Is sacrificing a virgin basically helps with the crops. And that's the whole thing, is they lure him because they know he's a virgin and he's a Christian. And that's the whole thing, is but basically leading him to where he needs to be in order to be the sacrifice.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty fascinating.
you know, I've heard, like, really good things about this. Like, oh, it's great British horror. But to me, if your movie doesn't scare me, and I literally can't tell that it's horror because nothing scary happens. I mean, there's tension, sure, like for the last 30 minutes. Versus, okay, the last 30 minutes is good. And I was like, okay, like this has got me a little bit, maybe. But the, I don't know, all the singing, like, I think it qualifies more as a musical than a horror.
I would actually say probably more like a murder mystery than anything else.
I mean, it's competent. It's a competent mystery. I was really bored. I didn't really get this one. Oh. Maybe after I looked at it, watched it again, with more of a sense of humor about it. But yeah, to me, if your movie's not scary and I can't pinpoint it as a horror movie and it's mostly revered as a horror movie, it is a failure. I don't know. Just to me, I was expecting like maybe some decent scares, but no. It was more boring than anything. It's a borer. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I mean, but I would say it's not a horror movie in the sense that people are being murdered and there's gory stuff and shock suspenses and what we normally associate with a horror movie. It is a mystery in the sense that Howie's there looking for a missing girl and the community seems to be playing with him. So what's real and what's not? But I do think there's that ending is just pure horror. There's nothing. He's been.
Yeah, I mean, but when he sees the Wicker Man, yeah.
And he knows what it is, and he knows what they're leading them to do, and he can't escape his fate. Here he is. He's a man of faith, a man of science, a man of logic, a police officer, authority figure, and all of these things are meaningless. He's completely powerless. From these people who, they don't hate him. He is just the lamb. He is the goat that's in the thing that's got to be burned alive so that they can have their crops, have a successful season.
Well, I thought
religion.
Sorry, I want to go back to the end of the film. They discuss it's Fool's Day coming up, and they keep dropping that hint to us the whole film. Mm-hmm. But you won't be here then, so we don't know. And then it shows up. He's the fool.
Yes.
We had no idea. That was never told us to us, but I love that part.
No, exactly. He's led along and he sees the display, he sees the fake heads, the Punch and Judy stuff, and he doesn't get it.
Nope.
He's I didn't get the film.
But that moment too, when they stop and they all turn on him and he realizes that he's been played is a great moment.
I agree.
No, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely, like, I guess it's a scary situation if you're in it. Like, oh, all these people, all these pagan people want to kill me. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really care about the character. I didn't really care about the police guy. I was like, okay, he's getting burned alive. All right. I don't know.
I don't think he gets that he's going to be burned alive until he sees the Wicker Man.
No. I've just seen cult movies, and I just feel like I knew where it was going a bit, and I don't know. I was just bored by it. I mean, maybe I'll just have to watch it again. Maybe I just missed something, but because I know I'm in the minority, but I don't know. I just find like it's not traditional horror, but I was expecting something. I guess maybe I didn't know it was this bizarre. I guess I don't know.
No. Okay. Well. Simon, any last words on this one?
Yeah, watch it. Don't listen to Daniel.
Yeah.
No, I mean, no, it's revered, but I don't know. I don't like it.
That's okay. You're allowed to.
I hated it at the time.
You love Paddington, so I don't.
I appreciate it. Oh, God damn it, man.
What?
Paddington 2 is a great fucking movie.
Oh, boy. So what's next on our list?
Fly.
The Fly, starring
The Fly, starring Vincent Price, David Hedison, Patricia Owens, and Herbert Marshall.
Did we all see it?
Nope.
No, I haven't watched it.
Okay. I just watched it before the show. I was surprised that it was in color. I always had a vision of the original Fly being in black and white. But it was in Technicolor and CinemaScope. It looks fantastic, I thought. I found it interesting that the script was by James Clavell.
Yep.
Who wrote Shogun and all that stuff. I thought it was very interesting that it was set in Montreal. And both movies are actually set in, were set in Montreal. And that Vincent Price, known for horror, isn't really, like, he's like a bit player in this film. He's like, he's part of it, but he isn't the villain or the monster.
Nope.
Which I thought was interesting. So I thought that he was the fly.
So did I.
And I remember seeing it years and years ago and not remembering, but it's basically the story of his brother and how his brother created a transportation device very similar to the Brundlefly, the Cronenberg movie, obviously that took inspiration from this one. He's married, he has a son. And the way it's structured, it's like there's a murder at the plant, that a man's head and arm were crushed under one of those pressing machines, just basically turned to jelly and squeezed out. And so the wife is there, and she said, "Yes, I killed my husband. I killed him." And she doesn't seem upset or distraught about this. But Vincent Price is obviously thrown off because his brother, he loved him. And he loved his wife, and they were madly in love, and how could she be so cold and not show any remorse for this. So then we gradually go back, and there's a concern about flies in the background. And you hear buzzings of flies in various scenes. And the son tried to catch a fly, and it had a white head, and they couldn't figure out what it was. The police constable comes in. Eventually, she tells them the story that her husband created this teleportation device. And the first sign that something went wrong was a cat went into it. The cat never showed up on the other side.
Nope.
You could hear howling in the background. And there's actually a bit of a joke about it. He says, "You know, I could hear a cat. So the cat became one with the universe. This would be funny if it wasn't so sad for the cat." He makes kind of a joke about it. And I thought that was kind of morbid, but still kind of funny.
Well, hold on. It's his cat, though. It's not like he picked up a stray. It's the family's cat he's sending to orbit.
Family cat, yeah. Which was kind of weird, but it works for their guinea pigs. He's able to do it without problems. And then she just says, "Please don't do it on any more pets. You know? Don't send any more of the family pets through this machine." And he says, "All right, fine, I won't." And then the next thing you know, he's done it himself. And there's a mistake in the thing. A fly was in the machine, and the machine screws up, and he gets the head in the hands of a fly. But he covers his face up, and there's kind of an interesting, you know, there's not a lot that happens in this film. Basically, he's transformed. He talks to her a little bit. She investigates some stuff. She tries to capture the other fly. She's not successful. He destroys the lab, burns his notes. They go. We learn how they crushed it, and then as the police are going to come and take her away to the madhouse, the fly is discovered in a web in the front yard, and the son comes in, "I found the fly," and they come out and they look at it, and so you see it close, and I thought, I was fine with everything in this film until the very ending.
Oh my God.
Because the spider web looks so awful, and the spider looks so fake.
Yeah.
But you see a close-up. So every other shot of this fly we've seen, it's like a fly with, like, white paint on the head.
Yeah.
Something, right? So then this final close-up, we see his face and arm on the fly's body. And he's screaming, "Help me, help me." You know, and that's it. And then the spider eats him, and then the guy throws a rock on it, smashes them both to death. And the police constable, and then they work out that no, they're going to let the wife go, because the police constable is as guilty of murder as she is. And so they work it out that the husband committed suicide, and that's the story they're going to go with. And that's the end of the movie. And I've spoiled it for everybody.
No, I think they really worked that fly angle in throughout the film really well.
Yeah.
Like, they constantly show you flies and this and that, and when she's in the room getting hysterical over flies. I love how the kid keeps finding it.
Yeah.
Every time they go, oh yeah, I saw that fly Mama's looking for. What? Where? Oh, I saw it this morning.
I thought the sets were very good, and the effects on the transportation and the teleportation machine were kind of interesting with the neon and stuff. And the factory was kind of cool. They actually went to an actual factory and shot the machinery. So it seemed higher production value than I was expecting.
They put money into it because I watched on TCM, and they said at the beginning they liked the script so much, the production company, they put more money into it than they were going to.
Yeah.
So that's why you get Vincent Price and stuff, because they said they upped the money into it. Now, I thought the fly looked good. I thought the guy as the fly looked pretty good.
I thought the makeup was pretty good. The mouth was pretty kind of cool, and they put some thought into how he sucked up liquids and how he disposed of the meat. There was some thought of that, thought put into it, but then of course he's gradually losing. So what I couldn't quite figure it out was they mixed the DNA of both, but eventually the fly took over.
Yes.
So what was, meanwhile, was he taking over the fly?
Yes.
The
other one? I think so, because you can hear the fly talk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's saying, help me, help me, help me.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So maybe it's wherever the head is, that's what takes over, I guess, in this universe. I guess we're supposed to take that, because he definitely knows he's a fly throughout the film.
Yeah.
And when he's in that web, he knows he's in the web about to be eaten. I don't know if a fly would, or maybe they do. I don't really know enough about flies to say.
Well, and he's communicating.
Yes.
And then Vincent Price is sitting there waiting. You can hear it going, help me, help me, help me. He's just completely oblivious to all of it.
That was creepy as hell, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. This film made millions at the box office, by the way. I thought it was well done. I think it's one of the best films I hadn't seen from this era.
It's definitely one that got a lot of attention. It's brought up a lot as a great 1950s horror movie.
No, I think it is.
And I liked it. It was slow. I'll admit, it was slow, and it's definitely not a modern film.
No.
But I take the fact that it's a 1950s horror movie, 1958 or something like that, or something. Now, the second film, I only made it about a third of the way through.
Oh, I finished it.
But you review the first one. I kind of jumped the gun.
First one's great. Okay, the second one is, it's a son.
Do you want to do the cast?
Go ahead. Sure.
Sorry, Return of the Fly, Vincent Price, Brett Halsey, David Frankham, and John Sutton.
I think the second one is almost, it's not even a copy of the first one. I mean, obviously the same thing, similar happens. The son becomes the fly in the second one. But it really doesn't become a horror film. I find that the core becomes a murder mystery kind of thing, or maybe a heist film.
Uh-huh.
Introducing the gangster. Have you met him yet? You must have.
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, it becomes a heist film almost. The guy that the son is working with, he wants to steal the technology to sell it to make all this money.
Yeah.
Okay, and then they introduce, obviously, a guy, a fence. So they introduce a fence, and they go through the same process again. And Vincent Price goes, oh, no, it's happening again. And then, the police commissioner shows up, and they explain the wife away, saying she died, she never recovered.
Yes, well, it starts out with her funeral.
Yes.
I found the jump to black and white kind of jarring.
It didn't bug me.
To because the first one to me seemed almost, aside from the scenes in the basement, it was very bright.
Yes.
Lots of sunlight. It's not a mournful movie. It's not there's a little bit of suspense there, but it's not like Dread.
Well, I don't think it's trying to be. It's trying to be more of a cops and robbers film. Like the fly becomes a vengeful person at this point. It's got much more brain power than the first fly.
Okay, so, this is the second, which I haven't gotten to.
Okay, well, I'm going to ruin it. The fly kills the fence at one point. Figures out how to get there. I don't know how the fly figures out where to go.
Uh-huh.
But he tracks down the fence and kills him. Then he kills the other partner. They capture him, and they put him back to normal. That's really the end of the film.
Interesting.
So it definitely doesn't. I like the first film better. The second film is okay.
They
the makeup effects from what I've seen of The Fly in the second one, it looks faker.
It does. They don't put as much money into it. You can tell that.
Okay.
And I've never seen the third film, Curse of the Fly. I did not watch.
No.
That's from 66. So I don't think Price was in it, so I didn't really investigate to find it.
I mean, it's funny in that I know I've seen them because they used to run on television regularly. So I know I've probably seen The Curse and so forth, but it just... anyway, so do we have anything else? What else is on the list? Anything else?
That's it. Nothing else on the list.
All right. So did anybody buy anything or do anything exciting? Or
I did buy something. I'll be right back.
Where'd you go? What?
I don't know.
What's he doing?
I can't read Echo.
Did you buy anything, Daniel, or?
No. Did you?
I did. I bought a couple movies. I bought Justice League versus the Fatal Five.
Okay. Okay.
Animated film. I bought Stan and Ollie. I bought Hellboy. And that's it.
Okay.
Are you set up for the new Hellboy?
I'm curious about it. I'm willing to give it a shot.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think I've watched the originals. So I'll have to do that.
No, I love the originals.
Okay, you guys ready? I bought La Joven.
Oh, sorry.
Louis Bunuel film.
Okay.
And I bought The Woman with Red Boots, Catherine Deneuve, Fernando Rey, another Louis Bunuel film. I bought Christina with Catherine Deneuve, Ferretto Ray, and Franco Nero. Another Louis Bunuel film.
Yes.
And I bought a Fellini film called Casanova.
Oh, okay. I have one that says Casanova 77.
That's probably this movie. I don't know. I'll see what year it was made in. It doesn't tell me. Yeah, I think so. It says 1970s. I don't know. I bought it at a DVD. Yeah, 1976. I bought it at a DVD closing sale store at Queen's Video, so.
Oh, you went to Queen. Yeah, I'm sad that place closed down.
So I just picked up some Bunuel because I never watch them. So I have problems finding subtitle films a lot. So I just bought some stuff I was interested in.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's it. We're out of here until next time. If they make it.
Generally, you will watch it.
Fair enough. Goodbye, all.
Goodbye.
Hey, thank you for listening. Could you please give us an iTunes review? And also, if you'd like to donate, please do so at our homepage.